Welcome to Digging the Dharma, where we dig into the Buddhist Dharma and explore ways to bring these 2,500-year-old teachings into our lives. I'm Doug Smith of Doug's Dharma on YouTube and the online Dharma Institute.
And I'm John Aaron, teacher at New York Insight Meditation Center and mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher and teacher trainer and founder of Space to Meditate.
Well, good morning again, John. Great to see you as always.
Hi, Doug. Yes, I'm here for the time being. I'm in this house that I live in, this condo, and you are in your house.
I'm in my house.
And, we have houses that we get attached to, and I've been dealing a lot with this lately, as our listeners may know, that there is this impending move to join my other half in
Windy
Chicago,
City.
In the Windy City in time.
Lovely city. Lovely city.
It is. It is. And I mean, it's still about 4 months away, but I mean, where we actually move. But in the meantime, I found it really interesting because I've been showing our apartment. We'll rent our place here.
Mm.
And a few things. The idea of somebody else living in my space comes up.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we finally decided at this point, you know, that we're going to rent it. By the way, if anybody's looking, we're going to rent it furnished, which was a big relief, actually, because I kept – first off, I don't know how long we'll be in Chicago. But then the idea of actually moving our furniture out of our home, which we've lived in now for close to 13 years, is like, wait a minute.
Well,
this
you didn't want to sell it, I assume.
Right. We don't want to sell it yet, you know, and that's, well, that's for, you know, because we may move back to New York. I mean, we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll never find a place like this ever in New York. We happen to be lucky and how fortunate we are.
Mm.
And, you know, we're talking here about a real first world problem, I have to admit. And yet it brings up a lot around attachment and what's mine and who am I in relation to the things that I have and identity with, you know, I mean, it's when you're really confronted with it, whatever it is, like if it's material or if it's a job or whatever, you know, or a potential job, you know, how does the mind grab onto it? Well, it's what we were talking about in a different way earlier, is this idea of reifying something as who I am.
Mm-hmm.
It's what amazes me is how fast the mind goes there.
Yeah.
You know? And it doesn't matter how long I've been practicing.
Yeah. Well, you see it probably quicker now than you would have before.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
And I mean, one of the things that occurs to me is that there's a time in that process at which, at least in my estimation, my experience, the dukkha is the strongest. And that's in that liminal space, which you're sort of in now, where you're not entirely in one place.
Right.
And you're not entirely in the other place, but you're sort of trying to work out how to work from one to the other. It's sort of like, I'm not entirely this person, and I'm not entirely that person, but I'm somewhere in between. And that's a very painful place to be in, of sort of being.
Or it can be,
I mean, ordinarily, at least again, my experience, it's sort of like you're somewhat detached. My parents are now in sort of this kind of thing where they're living at home, happily, but you know, in the process of considering moving to assisted living. And it's tough. I mean, that is the most difficult time. It's that in between. Once you're in, you know, once you've made the move, I mean, of course, fingers crossed everything goes well and the place is nice and yada yada, but you know, theoretically that's okay. And then, you know, then you're there and you've got a new, as it were, identity. You've got a new, you've got a new self. But it's that in between that is so difficult for all of us, I think, at least, again, from my own experience.
And it's fascinating because it should actually be really cool.
Reframe it, please.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's so fascinating because, you know, and this is what kills me because I spent a lot of last year, and I'm actually offering a day of practice in Chicago based on a theme that I've been working with for a while about joy and uncertainty.
There you go.
And it's like, oh, well, here I am in this liminal space. Am I actually experiencing joy? I should be, because I don't know what's going to happen. And how cool is that? You know, I don't know where we're going to, and that should be really cool. And yet when I'm confronted with actually letting go of something, oh, wait a minute. It's another matter.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you're talking about your parents, because I remember my mom making that move from her apartment to an assisted living place. And what we did, and she went to a really lovely place, but what we did first was we had the new place she was moving into painted in the same colors as her old place.
That's nice.
And it worked. You know, it was like, it was such an easy transition for her. You know, but you do become so attached. And of course, the attachment to things beyond the house is another matter altogether. And I am looking forward to, I was just thinking this morning, okay, you know, I still have a bunch of CDs. What am I going to do with all these CDs? I can't leave them out for whoever rents our place. Am I going to get rid of them? Am I going to take them with me? All of it, just little stuff.
Yeah.
And then sadly, you know, who am I to complain? Yeah. You know, I just thinking of the Palestinians in Gaza who are just like continually, you know, I mean, that it's like, what am I complaining about? You know?
Yeah. Although you shouldn't, I wouldn't minimize it. I mean, in other words, no matter what pains any of us on listening to this podcast or us personally, no matter what pains we're going through, there's always going to be somebody else who's going through worse.
Of course.
And there's a, I mean, you know, we all have that sort of knee-jerk, you know, tendency to sort of try to diminish our own pain and say, you know, well, there's, you know, Lord knows there's people out there who are just going through hell. And my, you know, whatever it is, stubbing my toe today is nothing compared to that. But look, it's still pain, and you still have to work through it, and there's no point in minimizing it, you know?
Yeah. I wouldn't even call it pain. I would call it...
Well, suffering.
I would call it confusion and delusion, you know, of, oh, well, what really matters?
Yeah.
You know, and
Well, there's also a lot of planning involved, as you know.
Of course, yeah.
And that gets tedious and confusing and... you know, it's just like, oh my God, I've got to do 25,000 different things before we can do this, you know, and that I understand. That's tough.
And it also kind of makes you realize, yeah, the Buddha had the right idea. He just let go of everything and went into the forest with his ropes.
Yeah.
And, you know, just coming down to the bare minimum.
That's the idea.
Yeah. And like, why am I holding onto all this stuff anyway, right?
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, you can't take it with you. So it's like, I mean, I can take it with me to Chicago, but then, you know, but in the end, in the final looking at it, and yet here we are, we get so attached. And
I remember when we were moving out of our apartment in New York, similar to you, and the same kind of thing. But I, you know, I must say, you know, obviously there was a lot of angst with making all the plans and all this stuff, calling up all these people and getting all this stuff scheduled. But once we got the stuff dealt with, and a lot of it we had to simply throw out because we couldn't find anywhere to, you know, take it. It was frankly a load off my back. I mean, really,
oh, of course.
I mean, I didn't mind, you know.
It's cathartic.
It is.
And then of course the one of the things that gets in the way, you know, when you talk about throwing stuff out, it's like, first off, throwing books out, you know, that's a weird thing to be doing, right? But it's try to get rid of books these days.
Yeah.
And CDs, even worse, you know, because of course CDs, the old form of CDs, they were all in these plastic jewel boxes, you know, you want to recycle them. That's a lot of work to like take all that stuff out. And it's like, or you can just chuck it. And it's like, oh God, that then you feel, you know, it's like, it's amazing sort of how we get wrapped up in our own stuff.
Yeah.
And of course there are famous, I'm sure I've talked about this before, the famous George Carlin Dharma talk, I would say, on stuff, you know, and the stuff that we hold on to and we can't let go of, we have to take it with us. And yet it's just stuff. I think we may have even put a link to that talk in somewhere, but I mean, it all comes down to how we identify, and the way we identify both with our stuff and our home and our furniture. And, you know, and there's that incredible line from the Dhammapada about, you know, the house builder, you know, which really has to do with the building of oneself, right?
Yeah.
And yet it's such an apt image for everything. House builder, you're seeing, you will not build this house again.
Yep.
All your rafters broken and the ridgepole dismantled, immersed in dismantling, the mind has attained to the end of craving.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of seems to indicate the house builder as Mara, just because, you know, usually in early texts, it's Mara who is seen.
Yeah.
You know, it's this creature who keeps us attached to the world, who keeps us attached to things, attached to our sense of self. And
yeah, attached to various experiences and, mm-hmm. and jobs and all yeah. of that stuff. And places.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, a house, a home is a place, you know, and it's sort of like you are attached to a certain kind of space and place that it's hard to get yourself out from, you know?
Yeah, and what's so interesting about it is that I know that I've moved a lot since I think I've been in New York now for 28 years, I think. Wow. And it's the longest place I've lived anywhere, and I have lived in 6 different places. The home we're in now, you know, I've been in longer than any place. In fact, I have to say it's probably the longest place I've lived anywhere since I was born, you know, because my family also moved. And so you think about that, and then it's like you realize as you've been in a place for a long time, how attached we get to it. It's probably one of the deepest forms of attachment, you know, whether it's, and our jobs can be the same thing. I mean, I don't have a job per se. I have my life, which is my work, which fortunately, for the most part, sustains me. But I certainly have worked with a lot of people who, you know, have their job and then desire another job because they're, you know, they feel they deserve the other job or whatever it is, you know, and we get attached to those things and then it either comes or it doesn't. And how does that impact how we identify? And so this Second Noble Truth stuff is really pretty powerful, you know, you know, attachment and craving and clinging to, even though it's all impermanent anyway.
I mean, it's not just a house, but it's also a city, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We get attached to cities, to, you know, locations in a broader sense.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, you were saying that you might want to, you know, come back to New York or, you know, and so, and I know from personal experience, attachment to New York. I mean, I grew up in New York.
Right.
And, you know, it took some time for me to decide not to want to live in New York anymore. I mean, because I love the city, but I just prefer not to live there right now in my life. But I still feel the attachment to the city. And there's this kind of sense of, you know, being a New Yorker, you know,
right?
An ego sense, you know, of, I mean, and I'm sure our listeners will have similar ideas, but not from New York. Some people are Bostonian. I have to be a Chicagoan.
Yes, right.
Los Angelino, whatever it is, you know, we get attached to, you know, being from a particular place. And that goes hand in hand, you know, with wanting to stay there, you know, even if it's not in a particular apartment, you know, we could say, oh, well, you know, all right, I give up this apartment. You know, maybe I'm really renting it. Maybe I don't particularly love it, but I still want to be in that city, you know?
Yeah.
You know, as though there was only one city in the world that, you know, that was sufficient.
I was at an event a few weeks ago. And so I lived in Boston for a long time before I moved to New York. I lived in Boston for almost 20 years. Is that right? Yeah. And I was in Boston running a company that I started and a few other things. And then I moved to New York in the same business. And anyway, I bumped into a colleague at this concert who I hadn't seen in maybe 10 years. I don't remember the last time I saw this former colleague from the music world. And he said, oh, so you're still living in Boston? And it was like, that was over 24 years ago. Mm. That was almost 30 years ago that I lived in Boston. But, you know, he had identified me with Boston. Mm. Even though I'm not even from Boston. I don't sound like I'm from Boston or anything. You know, it's just like, yes, I lived there for a while and I let it go. And I don't miss it. And, you know, it's like I lived in Brooklyn for a while. I don't miss it until I go to Brooklyn. You know, it's amazing how we become identified with certain geolocations. And what's fascinating, actually, slight digression digression, you know, is that these days, because so much of our communication is online, you know, we're dealing with people all over the world, you know, and people listening to this maybe all over the world. And like, are we, you know, how does it all change, you know, when we are working in real time in different locations or communicating to people in different locations through the, you know, our technology now, we don't necessarily know where anybody is. Mm. And so we can't get attached to an idea of someone where they are. Necessarily. I mean, especially if it's somebody we don't know directly. Yeah, it's all interesting and fascinating. And this idea of being in that liminal space of uncertainty, which in a way we are always in, but we just don't see it that way. You know, I mean, you know, we're in the liminal space between life and death right now, right? Or birth and death.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, that's life. You know, life is in the liminal space. Mm-hmm. And we can either enjoy it or not. And so when we break it down into smaller units and those units of liminal space, you know, whether it's the impending move that I'm talking about or waiting for a medical procedure or waiting for a job to arise or not arise, you know, how do we hold ourselves within that place? And how do we find some level of joy within that space?
Well, I think that your discussion earlier of you know, finding joy in the openness of liminal space is a mm-hmm. good way to reframe
right
what is unsettling, I think, because that openness often appears, again, I'll speak from my own perspective, it appears to me as unsettling because it's disruptive in a sense. It's disruptive of what I would usually experience, you know, it's something where I know there's going to be a change. I don't know where this is going. And that's unsettling in a very direct way. And so if we can find ways to reframe it, like saying, you know, this is an adventure, a journey, something new, something interesting, that can help, I think, to at least, you know, put a little bit of, you know, a little bit of the glass half
right,
rather
right.
than half empty.
Sorry, I just couldn't help but bring to mind the end of Life of Brian.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Which is a little different, I suppose.
Yeah, a little different, but
that's,
yeah,
like
similar.
Que sera, sera, you know.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about that exactly. But it is recontextualizing. It is seeing something differently than we're used to seeing it. And
right. Looking on the bright side of life.
Yeah. Even when it's challenging. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, the moment we become attached to an idea of the way something should be, mm. we've closed off everything else. You know, that, of course, happens in meditation all the time, right? Oh, this meditation, I should be calm and tranquil, but I'm not, you know. But what is happening? In that
yeah,
moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the ordinary feels to us comfortable. It feels to us cozy, and you know, because we're used to it, and so we don't have to. The mind, you know, the brain doesn't have to work quite as hard with it because it's something that's familiar.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love the familiar. I'm a homebody in many ways, so
right.
I can appreciate that. I mean, on the other hand, there, you know, as you say, there is something to be said for, you know, this liminal space. And I think, you know, one way to do it, as we just said, is to reframe it. But another way, obviously to me, is just to sit with it and to see what it's like, you know, for the mind to be sort of freed up a bit and to be with that sense of insecurity to be with that sense of uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Yeah, fully.
Even if it's not particularly pleasant, life is not necessarily pleasant.
Yeah, no, it's working in that space between pleasant and unpleasant and neutral and like this, don't like that. And and it's right there where freedom can be found. And, you know, we're trying to push it one way or the other, as opposed to just being with it in as it is. And that's the interesting, you know, so it's like, I know this. Conceptually, I know it, right? And there are times when I actually experience it. And so that's what's really funny to me is that, you know, here's a moment where I'm right in the midst of it. And it's relatively, I mean, what am I complaining about, right? It's like I'm moving from potentially one important city to another important city. They all have their problems, similar problems, but they all have problems. And
they're beautiful. And both of them are beautiful and great
beautiful,
places.
Yeah,
great places.
And yet, you know, there's attachment, and it's like, and there's uncertainty, and I mean, we need these things for our practice in a sense. It's like if everything were just so, we wouldn't get anywhere. we need the rough edges to sort of see where our work is, where there's still a lot of work to do. Mm. And I think that's the important thing to remember is like, yeah, good thing that's there, because otherwise you might fall into delusion that you're actually awake, fully awake. You know, it's like, oh, right. You know, there's still this. And sometimes it's relatively, I mean, I have to say, you know, what I'm talking about, as I said earlier, is really kind of a first world problem, you know, of moving from one place to another and letting go, you know, we should all be so fortunate. At the same time, you know, when you're confronted with an illness or, you know, well, that's bad enough. You know, we're confronted with an illness. How do we hold that, and how do we work with, how does that become our teacher in a sense? And can it become our teacher? And, you know, a lot of, I know that one or two teachers feel that, you know, if you can find your way through some really painful experience, you know, that, or finding your way through a painful experience can be a real path of awakening. You know, and we need those experiences, I think, to really wake up. Not that we should go out looking for them. We don't really have to. They will arise.
Yeah.
But I can see that.
And just using them. I mean, I think as we had talked about reframing these kinds of experiences as sort of adventures, but we can also reframe them as teachers.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
That, you know, and, In you know, adventures, the reframing as an adventure is to reframe it as something that's pleasant as opposed to being unpleasant. And sometimes that's not available to us. I mean, sometimes it just is unpleasant. And then I think reframing it as a teacher is a little bit more maybe approachable to us, because we can sort of hold that with the unpleasantness at the same time. We can say, look, this just is not a very pleasant thing. I mean, you know, when I had my cold and bronchitis, it was just, there was periods of just not being very pleasant and not being in a very good state of mind and not being very, feeling very good. And of course, this is not a serious illness, you know, yada, 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 but still, you know, I did at the times really try to reframe it as just a teacher. You know, this is something, this is a little experience that will, you know, that I can, you know, sit in my meditation, being a coughing meditation, you know, good be luck. Aware of that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, it's all true. All true. Yeah. So there's a lesson everywhere. There's a teacher everywhere. We just have to recognize them as they come and go.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, then there are those moments when, like, the coffee gets to the bottom of the cup and you're thinking, oh, my God, what do I do now? I have to go make it again? No.
And we're getting sleepy.
Yeah. So, and I only bring that up because it's how we support the show. So through your generosity in buying us a coffee at Buy Me a Coffee, which you can do at our website, digginthedharma.com, as well as become a member or leaving us a comment, a correction, or a question.
Yeah.
Would love that. So please check it out. Go back and listen to some of our archival. We have quite an archive now. I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah.
I'm realizing I have to go lead a meditation in 15 minutes, so I need to get off. But
great to talk with you, John.
Good to see you. Until next time, and until all of you we hear from and you hear us, until next time, keep digging the Dharma. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on your podcast directory. And please check us out at digginthedharma.com, where you can leave a comment, buy us a coffee, and even become a member. You can find out more about me, John Aaron, at johnaaron.net, and Doug at dougsdharma.com.